Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, if you're listening to the Duke Machado Show, you know it is 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. My friends out in California, golly, you're just getting your night started. 8 o'clock after your Wednesday. I'm prime time in West Coast time. So that's really, I'm really excited to be broadcasting tonight. We have a real special show. I'm gonna go old school time, way back in the days of human service. I can tell you there's a lot of news, a lot of hype right now with the presidential candidates. Some of them talking about carpet bombing the Middle East, and seeing if we can turn it into glass, see if that really works. And you know, it's rhetoric. It's things that people say that excite the base, the far right. That is not everyone gets excited, but I want to say that tonight's program, we're going back to my Air Force days. I worked on nuclear missiles. Like the show talks about my time in the Air Force. I worked on a short-range attack missile. It was a nuclear missile launched on the B-1 bomber. Power, the destruction that this one missile could produce was almost not even imagine the destruction. And so tonight I have asked for one of my best friends when I served in the Air Force, served with me there in Wichita, Kansas. Now he's back in Texas. He, you know, even when you're away from Texas, Texas boys would kind of stick together. So me and my buddy AJ, Anthony James, had a good time, and we served our country together. During the Cold War, it really was an era of Cold War. We had Russians, we had, you know, all the drama of that era, and we served during that time. So, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Duke Machado Show. What's going on, AJ?
Hey, Duke. Thanks for having me. How's it going?
Well, you know, I'm hoping that we can bring some rational discussion tonight. To this topic of carpet bombing.
I know that you've heard
the statement, but for the listeners, I'm just going to play this, and then I want you to give me your first thoughts after we play it. This bit's about 3 minutes long. This is Senator Ted Cruz and the statement about carpet bombing, the one that's creating so much of a ruckus. Here it is.
When Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama led NATO in toppling the government in Libya, and they did it because they wanted to promote democracy, and we were told then that there were these moderate rebels that would take over. Well, the result is Libya is now a terrorist war zone run by jihadists. Move over to Egypt. Once again, the Obama administration, encouraged by Republicans, toppled Mubarak, who had been a reliable ally of the United States, of Israel, and in its place, Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood came in, a terrorist organization. And we need to learn from history. These same leaders, Obama, Clinton, and far too many Republicans, want to topple Assad. Assad is a bad man. Gaddafi was a bad man. Mubarak had a terrible human rights record. But they were assisting us, at least Gaddafi and Mubarak, in fighting radical Islamic terrorists. And if we topple Assad, the result will be ISIS will take over Syria, and it will worsen U.S. national security interests. And the approach, instead of being a Woodrow Wilson democracy promoter, we ought to hunt down our enemies and kill ISIS rather than creating opportunities for ISIS to take control
of the
country. We keep hearing from President Obama and Hillary Clinton and Washington Republicans that they're searching for these mythical moderate rebels. It's like a purple unicorn. They never exist. These moderate rebels end up being jihadists. And I'll tell you whose view on Assad is the same as mine. It's Prime Minister Netanyahu. Prime Minister Netanyahu has said Israel doesn't have a dog in that fight because Assad is a puppet of Iran, a Shia radical Islamic terrorist. But at the same time, Prime Minister Netanyahu doesn't want to see Syria governed by ISIS.
You have said you would, quote, carpet bomb ISIS into oblivion, testing whether, quote, sand can glow in the dark. Does that mean leveling the ISIS capital of Raqqa in Syria, where there are hundreds of thousands of civilians?
What it means is using overwhelming air power to utterly and completely destroy ISIS. To put things in perspective, in the first Persian Gulf War, we launched roughly 1,100 air attacks a day. We carpet bombed them for 37 days, saturation bombing, after which our troops went in and in a day and a half mopped up what was left of the Iraqi army. Right now, Obama is launching between 15 and 30 air attacks a day. It is photo op foreign policy. We need to use overwhelming air power. We need to be arming the Kurds. We need to be fighting and killing ISIS where they are. You would carpet bomb where ISIS is, not a city, but the location of the troops. You use air power directed, and you have embedded special forces to direct the air power. But the object isn't to level a city. The object is to kill the ISIS terrorists.
Okay, there you have that. Tell me what you think of his statement. Is it as bad as the media is making it out to be?
Well, there's some, you know, that's some strong talk, and I believe we're in a time where, you know, in certain instances around the world, the gloves are off or the gloves need to come off. You have to be careful. I'm not sure. I don't know if Cruz is ex-military or not, but, you know, you and I know.
He's not.
Served, especially if you've been in a forward operating area, the last thing you want to do is to have to get into a war. After you've seen it, after you understand it, the very last option you want is to have to go to war. And so, you know, carpet bombing started way back in the Vietnam era. That's where that phrase pretty much came from, way back when. Wolf Blitzer there was saying about turning the sand into glass and seeing if it can glow. That's a nuclear reference. That's a nuclear contingency right there, because you and I know from everything we were in as far as nuclear weapons in the Air Force and that program, what a nuclear weapon can do. Now, I know earlier you were saying how what we worked on, our missiles, the short-range attack missiles, also the air-launched cruise missiles, the advanced cruise missiles, and it was for the FB-111 program, which I was in New York before you and I met. Our B-1 program you and I served in, and then, of course, the B-2 program. What we worked on, Duke, was, and you know this, it was 10 times, one of those missiles was 10 times the power of what we dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That's what we worked on daily, okay? And that's the responsibility we had. As far as the rhetoric goes with Senator Cruz from Texas, you know, I guess he tried to clean that up a little bit as far as saying not carpet bomb a city, as in, you know, what happened in World War II. The Germans did it. We did it. All you have to do is look at England, how bad the destruction was there from the Germans. And it's a strong rhetoric. I understand where he's coming from, and I understand that we need to listen to our military advisors that's on the ground, the guys that are professionals, what we call the war class. I believe Fiorina, you know, use that term, which I haven't heard in a while, which is necessary. You know, the military is our warrior class, and we're there for a specific reason, and that's to keep us safe and to keep our allies safe as well. So I can understand why that stirred up some feelings in people. It was strong. Some people can't swallow that pill, and that's why sometimes things of that nature need to be left in the hands of the people that can actually stomach the job, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and, you know, everyone wants to know in a time of war, and I think we are in a time of war.
I'd agree.
We're in a time of war, but we're not engaged in the war. We're kind of trying to disengage. And the problem that I have with what he said was that it's a signal, It's a signal that shows that that's a last resort. Last resort is carpet bombing.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
It's a lot of saber rattling there. You have to be careful. Okay, so you kind of look at things, and like in the business world I'm in, you kind of look at when you're negotiating or whatever the case is, and the pros and cons of doing a deal or whatever the case is, or getting in business with somebody, or whatever the situation is, you have to say, okay, can it get any worse than the point we're already at? And if not, then you throw all your cards on the table and you go for it. But if there's an ability to regain what was lost, which in some instances we have that available to us, very slim, but it's still there. But there's a lot that's going to have to change on the landscape of how we handle business internationally, our relations with other countries. He discussed about toppling these different regimes, and I discussed this with people before. I say, the Middle East has been unstable for eons. This is nothing new. They've always been at war there. If you're a person that believes in God and believes in the Bible, you can go back to the Old Testament and see it, Duke. But when you remove their form of government they've had for thousands of years, and that's all the people are used to, and all of a sudden you have this vacuum, somebody's got to fill that vacuum, and that's what we're dealing with today. But as far as Senator Cruz's remarks, a bit strong. Maybe could have been delivered a little bit better. He's in a hot seat, and if he's going to be elected president or he's going to be the candidate for the Republican Party, then he's got to be used to being in a hot seat there and make sure his words are delivered carefully, especially in a time of war or preemptive war.
I don't know if we are on now. It sounds like we're back.
Yeah.
Are you with us, AJ?
Yeah, I can hear you. I don't know if you've missed everything I just said.
Well, somehow, we lost a signal. I don't know what happened. But we're back.
Okay.
Last I heard what you had mentioned, you were talking about the business world.
Oh, yeah. I was just saying that, sometimes you have to assess the situation to see if you make a move, will it take you back further than where you are? Or if you're already in the basement, you can't go any lower than the basement, right? So
right.
If you throw something out there and if you're already in the basement, it's like, hey, it can't get any worse than this. But as far as Senator Cruz's remarks, they were strong, and I'm quite sure, people that can't stomach something like that or this being a scary time for a lot of people, especially if you have a young family and you're looking at the situation of what's going on in our country, that can be unsettling. It can be unsettling, and we can look at it as, hey, this is a lot of saber rattling. We don't need that type of rhetoric or whatnot. What the senator is trying to say, maybe it could have been delivered better. I don't know. His words are his words. I understood where he was coming from. They may have been a little bit too strong, could have been dialed back a little bit. So
yeah.
Tell me what your thoughts about that, Duke, as far as, the way you see that.
Well, the way I see it, it's like basically what he's doing is he's trying to gain votes. He's trying to get support. He's throwing red meat. He's not thinking about the consequences of what he's saying. In fact, I've got a comment from a colonel who is mentioning something about him violating procedures of war. And I'll play that here in just a minute. But totally, it's pandering to his base. He knows he's got to, like you call it, rattle the sabers. So whatever he must do to make that happen, he's totally willing to do it. And so that's my issue with it. But I want to say this. We got some callers on the line. And I want to bring in a caller here, and we'll just join the conversation. Caller, your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, gentlemen, my name is Matt. I'm from Akron, Ohio. How are you doing? And thank you for your service.
Awesome. How can we help you? What's going
on?
Tell me what your thoughts are.
Well, my thoughts about what Cruz has been saying is something that I feel that we have lost in this country, and that's a resolve to actually win a war. Unfortunately, way too many times, especially since World War II, are we willing to put troops in harm's way saber rattle, like you've been saying, and do nothing about it. And that all that does is put our troops in danger and more citizens of whatever country we're in danger. I think what Ted Cruz is trying to say is if we are going to take a threat seriously, and I know he used the word carpet bomb, but I'm not sure that that was what he was getting at. I mean, we have a lot of precision weapons that we are willing to, that we have dropped, that we have used, but we're not willing to use them in what I consider a proper war strategy. And that's if you have an enemy who's hiding in a village, who's hiding in a school building, who's hiding in a hospital, and we're going to take this enemy threat seriously, and we have indeed considered it a war, then you need to go ahead and use that weapon. Damn the consequences of the people that are going to be hurt in the way. And I think that's what Cruz was trying to get at, is the fact that if we're going to go after the enemy, we're going to go after them hard. We are going to go after them with no apologies. We're going to feel bad for the civilian loss, which we should, but we're not going to apologize for it, and we will win, damn it. And I think that's what Cruz was trying to get at. What do you guys read on that?
Well, go ahead, AJ. I'll let you chime in first.
No, I agree with what you're saying. The thing about it is, you know, I've got a saying, you know, those who can't stomach warfare should leave it alone or not be the ones in charge of it and let the guys that can handle that responsibility do it. War is nasty. War is painful. Because of human nature, we will always have wars. That's just a fact. That's just a cold fact of nature. We can't get around it because for some reason the humans just can't seem to get along most of the time. But with that, if you're a politician, you're going to get asked questions like Wolf Blitzer threw at Senator Cruz, okay? I believe it was an unfair question because Wolf, who has been reporting on wars forever, knows good and well innocent people are going to get killed, okay? Just like any day of the week in our country, innocent bystanders get killed every day in traffic accidents. Okay, do we need to have a decisive moment or decisive consensus as far as how we're going to handle this? Yes, we do, because the problem is real and it is growing exponentially, and we need to be able to wrap our arms around it pretty fast, because every day it's going to get worse until we work together as a team in Washington, D.C. to make this happen and let the military do their job. A lot of times when things go bad is when we don't let our professionally trained military do what they're supposed to do. And so I agree with what Matt is saying. It's just that the political correctness comes into play sometimes, and that's what Wolf was playing. You know, he played that game. He pulled the innocent bystander, the innocent dead women and children card, which is unfair for a reporter to do. And I think it was unprofessional on his part to try to do that and try to pin Senator Cruz in the corner on that.
One thing that I want to throw in is that I think it was Dr. Carson mentioned during the debate that we should say that we're at war with ISIS, officially claim to be at war, and let's start taking wartime steps against them. We're just kind of pitter-pattering around. We're not taking anything serious. And I realize that's what Cruz's comments are all about. He's trying to say that he's tough. I mean, people want to know who the commander-in-chief is, whether they have the capabilities. But this is what I say. If you're going to signal that you're ready to carpet bomb, what that tells me is that you already have relinquished any possibility of a solution. If you're talking about carpet bombing, then you've already ruled out that we may have more intelligence on the ground.
Everything in between, right?
Have different ways to strategically, like you mentioned, take out leaders. You know, this has to be a cultural movement that happens within their own religion, Shia, Sunni. We're not going to, as Americans, we're not going to solve that problem. They're battling for control of Islam. and they're using the United States as a scapegoat so that they can fuel their movement. Look, carpet bombing is not the answer. Carpet bombing is not going to fix anything. So to talk about carpet bombing, to me, is diversionary tactics.
Now, I like to address the carpet bombing,
but truly, how are we going to get off of Saudi oil? How are we going to cut our ties with the Middle East oil? They own our debt. They own us. We're puppets.
I think AJ was trying to get in there, so I didn't want to interrupt.
No, I was just going to just kind of objectively look at a couple of things culturally, because I know you said, Duke, we can't get in the middle of what's going on in their country, which is true. Okay, so when I look at the whole refugee argument and things of that nature and making sure that border security means national security, which it does, in the least sense it does, I look at two things. I look at our culture. We are a culture of fighters. It's in our DNA from Native Americans to the war with Great Britain, the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the Texas-Mexican War, et cetera. We've always had to fight for either what we already had or had to defend or what, you know, we wanted or whatever the case was. It was always a fight. In our country, we're not afraid to fight, okay? And that's the difference between us and a lot of other countries. So when I see guys, you know, you see it on the news, and you see a lot of able-bodied men who are in their late teens, their 20s, early 30s, fleeing as a refugee, I'm thinking, okay, maybe they're taking the women and children to safety, and then they're going to return and fight for their land because, you know, I live about 4 miles from a military installation where I'm at, and most of my block is either current or ex-military, and I'll be dang if somebody's going to come in our neighborhood and try to take something over without a fight. And so that bothers me. I'm concerned about that aspect where we shouldn't have to fight. You know, some of the stuff that's going on over there, those guys just need to duke it out and get it over with and have a decisive winner if that could ever happen. And then some of the other things when it comes to our safety, we need to engage in a little bit more.
Yeah, guys, let me make one more comment, and I'll let you get back to your show if that's okay.
Absolutely.
My dad was a Korean War vet. He was 82nd and 101st Airborne in Korea. He made quite a few comments to me in my young childhood, and he said, son, we had that damn war won 4 times. He said, we were right on the hive. We knew where everybody was at. We knew how to take control of everything, and we were called back because of the political bureaucrats in Washington 4 times, and it got nothing but my buddies killed. It got nothing but thousands of people that were related to that war killed. That's what bothers me about our modern-day warfare is the fact that we go in and we don't let the professionals, as you guys say, and I totally agree with that, we don't let the professionals run the war. We let Washington and the bureaucrats run the war. And that's why Ted Cruz kind of spoke to me. And I understand the carpet bombing thing, and I'm that term I don't think is what he meant to use. I think it's more of what I was saying, is that we need to go on there with overwhelming force and damn the consequences of the civilian casualties as long as we take it seriously. And we have talked, you guys have talked about in this show about how much of a last resort going into something called a war is, and it is absolutely a last resort. But if we commit military action, we need to do it properly, and we need to make sure it's done. Otherwise, we wind up killing more people, not just our own troops, but civilian lives. We wind up killing more people in the long run unless we do it right. And that's why Ted Cruz kind of spoke to me a little more.
But you have to say, it is a responsible thing to do to be realistic with the voters. We're not going to launch into war and start carpet bombing and blowing body parts and civilians. We're not going to just start out doing that.
No.
And to talk about it in that sort of context, To me, it's showmanship. It's unnecessary, and it,
a little
and it
overbearing.
Paints us to look like these radicals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little overbearing, and I agree with that. Listen, I'm going to let you guys get back to your show, and thank you for taking my call, and God bless you both. Thank you for your service.
You too, Matt. Thank you much.
AJ, what do you think?
No, I like what Matt had to say about that, and we've got to – unfortunately, you know, the type of leader as far as militarily that we're missing right now is a Colin Powell. Okay.
Oh, God, no.
Okay. So remember when you and I were serving, and we served during Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and, you know, Powell was there with Schwarzkopf and everything. I haven't seen a general like that in some time, and if we did have one, I'm not sure if the current administration would allow them to do their job, because we've had a lot of very good and sharp generals that have been dismissed or resigned because of disagreements with the administration on how to handle these things. Okay, case in point, I know a lot of people in healthcare. I know a lot of doctors, physician assistants, nurses, et cetera, you name it, okay? If I'm in a area, something pops off, there are injured people. Yeah, I know CPR really well, and that's about it. And I know how to close off a wound from bleeding out and all that. Okay, if someone tells me these people over here are professionally trained medical folks, they've gone through 8 years of medical school, they've done their residency, they've been at X hospital for so many years, is I'm moving back and I'm going to let them do their job. Okay, and so we're just kind of at that crossroads right now. And we're in a state of flux in our country, and it scares some people. It just really makes a lot of people unsettled, unsure of what's going to happen. And you know, Duke, at the end of the day, all an American citizen wants to know is the people that we elected in office, it's going to do their job and do a good job and make sure that we're safe and make sure that we have the livelihood that Americans are used to. That's really what everybody is wanting. Just say, hey, make sure you do your job that you said you were going to do because I elected you in office. And make sure we're safe, make sure our children are safe, and keep the country safe and keep the country prosperous. That's basically it. And so the way the world is today,
let's not have any fumbles.
Right. Do your job. Don't drop the ball.
Well, I'll tell you, this topic tonight about this carpet bombing statement, the candidates Cruz, Trump, Carson Rubio, those are like the top four candidates right now. And we've got some more callers on the line. I'm going to go ahead and bring another one in, and we'll field this caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Chris. I'm calling from Round Rock, Texas.
Round Rock. Three Texas guys on the phone right now. So tell me what's
Could
on your
be dangerous. Well, there's certainly some. I've been listening to the show, and by the way, great conversation. First of all, let me say that I appreciate both your gentlemen's service. It goes without saying that I sleep under the freedoms and have enjoyed the freedoms that you gentlemen put your family and yourselves in the way of in protecting us. So you've done something that I'm truly grateful for. So thank you.
Thank you. It was an honor and a privilege.
As far as this political season that we're in, I think I'm a fan of anybody at this point in time on the Republican ticket. So I'm going to try and live up to Ronald Reagan's commandment of thou shalt not speak ill of other conservatives or other candidates, maybe, except for Jeb Bush, I guess. So my sense is that, you know, Cruz is kind of gaining traction and gaining momentum. I believe when it all comes down to the end, he is probably the most qualified man in terms of upholding what we want and what you all were just talking about a minute ago about living, doing the job that the federal government is supposed to do, not what they have morphed themselves into doing. And in specific response to his carpet bombing, while it may seem that he's kind of stepped out there a little bit, this whole cycle is a little bit crazy. It always is, and of course Republicans are always held to a higher standard than the Democrats ever would be from the media. I think, you know, it got the message across. Do I think that Ted Cruz is going to go out there and launch B-52s and just carpet bomb Iraq and Syria? I don't think that's what he was suggesting he was going to do, particularly with the JDAM missiles.
Would you say that it was just to generate buzz?
Duke, this, you know, I've been thinking a lot about what these guys are going through and the campaigning and the traveling and their, you know, their fundraising they're doing, and they've got to be in 10 different places all at the same time. I could not imagine that I could personally campaign like that and not have something less than perfect fall out of my mouth. In fact, I know I couldn't, that wouldn't raise some eyebrows or cause people to react. And so at some point in time, and this may be the first time that Cruz has really kind of stepped up and said something quite this vitriolic, I don't think, you know, we're going to parse, and every single word and phrase is parsed. And what I appreciate about Trump being in the race is that he said, listen, it's time for us to get over this, you know, being offended, you know, waking up in the morning and looking for a reason to be offended. We're in a war, as you said. We are in an undeclared war because our president has refused to engage, because, after all, he did win a Nobel Peace Prize for doing nothing. And so he is going to try and abdicate for the next 18 or however, 12, 13 months until he's out of office, and simply be able to walk away saying, I ended two wars, regardless of the fact that neither one of those statements, that's true. And so we have the position we're in now is that it wasn't, you know, perfect for Cruz to say this. I don't think it makes sense militarily to carpet bomb anybody at this point in time. And it speaks to the people who are saying, by God, if we're going to be slaughtered in our own country, we're going to take the fight back to them, and we're going to slaughter these folks on their soil. We're not going to let them come back onto our soil and do what happened in San Bernardino or Paris or Fort Hood or Tennessee or up in the Boston bombing. I mean, the list is nauseating to think of how many attacks have happened since President Obama's been on since he's been the commander in chief. And the response has always been, well, let's look into it. It looks like workplace violence.
Workplace violence. That's the biggest joke. Obama would like to think that on his watch, there was never any terrorist activity in the country, but that would not be true. You're right. We're attacked all the time, and it's really just beginning. It's not. It kind of seems like a little surreal still, like we're maybe early stages of a movie or something. It's going to come to an end, but it's not ending. We're a long way off, and it's unfortunate. To me, that, like we were talking earlier, AJ, we look back at a different time. And my daughter, I've got a young daughter. She's just 8 years old. She's not going to have any idea of what we call the good old days. You know, a different era where we weren't concerned so much going to a football game and worrying whether a bomb's going to explode or something like that. Times Square, anything, or dams being tampered with, or water supplies. I mean, geez.
Yeah.
Life in America today.
Yeah, you know, I want to paint a picture and show you the contrast. The citizens of our country should enjoy, you know, the blessed life that we've been given, okay? When I think about our country, as far as before all this craziness was happening on a more frequent basis than it did previously, like with Beirut or whatever, back when. You know, I think about family cookouts, ball games, fun at the parks, fun at the beaches, playing baseball, frisbee, guys having a good time, pick up games of football, basketball, whatever, you know, seeing people rollerblade at the park or whatever. It's kind of like, I don't know if you remember the song by the Fresh Prince.
Lighter Shade of
Summertime.
Brown.
Summertime, right? The Summertime videos like that. And so America, you know, to me, is, you know, that's football, frisbee, church on Sunday, people caring, people sharing, people loving one another, free enterprise. Okay, the pitcher, if it gets out of control and we can't tighten down on our national security, and anyone who thinks, you know, and Duke, you know, I'm an independent, okay? I don't care which side of the ball you're on. If you actually believe there's not a national security issue and it's not as big as people are saying it is, you may have your head stuck in the sand. Because take that picture I just painted of the America that I grew up knowing, you know, besides some of the internal issues we have in our country, which still exist today, and then paint a picture of you have a kid like your daughter, Duke, or other kids and moms, girlfriends, grandparents, dads, uncles, cousins, brothers, whatever, hanging out at a Starbucks and somebody walks in and self-detonates. Or, you know, you're at a ballpark like, you know, what happened in Paris and all of a sudden you've got to empty out the stadium. And as you're emptying out the stadium, you've got people waiting for you so they can self-detonate. Or what happened in San Bernardino, where a coworker that was, you know, for all intents and purposes, a great person, went to the company picnics, went to the company parties, went to the movies, went and bowled with everybody, threw darts, whatever the case was, wouldn't watch the game or fight together, and this person walks in and tries to kill everybody. Or like a domestic terrorist we had in South Carolina, in Charleston, walk in while people have their heads bowed and their eyes closed in the middle of prayer and kill them. Okay, that's the America I don't want. That's the America I you know, my kids are now, my daughter's about to turn 21. She's serving in the Coast Guard. My son's 19 and his freshman year of college. You know, when I hear stuff going on at this is happening or this college campus is closed down, I automatically think, what if that happened at my son's college? Because I know I'll be on a plane or in a car, you know, Johnny on the spot, and I'm on my way. Or I think about, you know, my daughter who works for Homeland Security in the Coast Guard, the things that she has to address as a professional military person. And so the America I want is the one I laid out at first, not the one that extremists are trying to bring to us to make our world the way their world is on their side of the planet. We need to keep that mess over there.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, but part of the problem is that Obama was elected and his agenda was to fundamentally transform this country. And people didn't really understand what that was all about. They thought he might have had good intentions. But I want to talk a little bit about the Black Lives Matter movement because, you know, this movement is, whether we like it or not, has gained traction. It's in the media and it's a tool right now among a lot of people in the black community that they feel oppressed still. They feel that life is still unfair and the police are against the black man. We're gonna talk about this here in the next segment. I have another caller, and just we're gonna activate your microphone. If you'll tell me your name and where you're calling from. Caller 0460, that's the last four of your phone number, 0460. Oh, we lost that. Maybe they just wanted to listen. Sometimes people just want to listen, and I don't know that I've picked up on the signal that they just want to be left alone. That's okay. I invite you to listen, and if you want to talk, then we'll bring you on. So let's talk about this Black Lives Matter movement. I used to have a clip that I would play. It's the one where they were the Black Panthers were doing the oink, oink, bang, bang.
Was it in the 60s?
All power to the people. And the Black Panthers are marching around, and they got AK-47s and raising their fists in the air. Now, y'all may not know this, but AJ is he's black. And
why'd you say it like that,
there's
dude?
There's nothing anybody can do or say about it. But he's a friend of mine,
why'd
and he's
black. Like,
and so that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm not racist, but I have black friends. This is my proof. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, AJ. You know that. You're like a brother. I mean, we've been through so much together.
Yeah.
So much. So what's up with this Black Lives Matter? Just hit me straight.
Yeah. So, you know, let everybody know about Duke. Back in the day, you know, when we were in Air Force, Duke, you remember DJ, who was our chief, our bad boy. We used to call him Sensei. I actually saw him about a year and a half ago. He came down here to visit his sister in Rockport, and we went out and had lunch. And, you know, we hadn't seen each other in 19 years, right, since McConnell. And it was like, wow, and he still looked the same. And so we still communicate. But I remember how DJ used to get uncomfortable with Duke and I. You know, we were both Texas boys in the same unit there at McConnell. And, you know, we talked football. We both played high school football in Texas, and everybody knows about that. And so, I was chocolate, Duke was cream or something like that. And DJ used to get so uncomfortable, like, yeah, you can't say that. And like, Duke, DJ, we're from a different generation. You know, we address those things. And I remember I came from a pretty diverse, school, high school, right outside the Galveston area in Lamarck, Texas. And so I remember vividly a lot of my friends, we would sit around and actually discuss race issues. And I remember, you know, I was class of 88. We had guys who were class of 88, 89, 87. And we had these discussions like, hey, you know, that's not who we are. We're not going to be like that and have different hangups. Now, of course, we all had to, you know, learn some more stuff. There's a lot of stuff that our parents went through, and there's a lot of self-inflicted stuff on both sides and upon one another. And so my school was black, white, Hispanic, Asian. Okay, that was the makeup of our school, and it was awesome. And so as far as the Black Lives Matter, so if you haven't walked in the shoes, you're kind of a spectator, okay? You can empathize and you can look and want to help, which is good. And I truly believe there are good people on this planet, and I believe there are evil people on this planet. And good people and evil people are in every organization on the planet. At your work, police departments, government, your schools, you name it. There are good people, and then there are evil people, okay? And that's just the way I see it, because I've been here 46 years, and you know, once you see too much, you understand. Especially if you have to raise kids, and you have to protect them from all the nastiness of the world. And Duke, you understand. You have a daughter who's 8, and you don't truly understand how evil or sinister the world can be until you've brought a child into the world, and you have to defend and protect your child from that. Am I correct, Duke?
No, you're absolutely right.
You see the world a different way once you have kids. Okay, so if you are a person, like every time something happened in the last few years, let's say Trayvon Martin, let's look at Ferguson, Missouri, let's look at D.C., Chicago, Minnesota. You know, I look at my son, who's a great kid, sharp, good-looking, well-mannered. He's a gentleman, all right? When I see stuff like that on TV, I immediately think about my son because I'm not with him all the time, so I can't protect him all the time. You know, I've taught him how to handle himself in different situations. But if you keep seeing your demographic, and for some reason your demographic continues to just get hunted down and killed because of whatever reason, and when the frequency goes up and you're like, wow, this just isn't a blip on the timeline. You know, this is, if you look at a stock market and say, hey, this is rising and it's staying up, something's up. So you have to address that, and there's different ways to address that. It is a very emotional subject because people are dying. Kids are dying. You have to look at everything needs to be investigated. You know, the longer I live, the more, you know, you gain patience. Say, okay, let's see what happened. Let's see how everything rolled out, see who all was involved, what happened.
But people don't want to acknowledge the truth when it's in front of them.
What's the truth?
It doesn't even matter anymore.
What's the truth?
Well, for example, like the case with the hands up, don't shoot. What was his name? Brown.
Michael Brown.
Michael Brown, hands up, don't shoot. An entire movement was launched off of that. And evidence showed that that was never the case. But it doesn't matter. That's what I'm saying. The facts don't even matter to the people. They are thirsty for this. I think it's fueled, led by a more sinister movement, you know, socialist. They want chaos. They want uprisings. I think they want to implement some sort of martial law. And Obama would just be licking his chops, ready to launch his new civilian force.
Okay, so
I'm a conspiracy theorist or something. I don't know, but it's crazy.
Okay, so let's address that. Okay, so how many cases, Duke, have you looked at to where you say, okay, there's some gray area there, and a police officer... and I'm not defending either side. You know, as a black man, you know, there are certain facts in our country, and I don't hold people account. You know, I'm accountable for me, and I'm accountable for my success. And, you know, with anybody pursuing success in whatever arena, it's going to be uphill battle. I don't care if you have evil people in your way or not. It's going to be uphill battle. You have to go through the crucible of fire to be successful. But trying to, you know, again, look at it with open eyes, objectively, you have to look at the facts. Okay. So how many times have you seen, let's say the last 2 to 3 years, and more has been brought to light because more people have cameras and, you know, on their phones, and you can post something instantly or whatever in social media, have cops shot an unarmed person of color? And without provocation from that person, when the person was either unarmed, walking away from them, or even worse, they were already apprehended in handcuffs and then shot and killed. So how many cases are on that gray line where you say maybe, maybe not, there's not a reason here for people to get up in arms like in Black Lives Matter? How many times?
I'm not saying that there isn't police abuse. I'm not saying that it doesn't exist or crooked cops. How many videos have you seen where the police officer thinks he's going to just have a standard arrest and he goes up and the person's kind of being evasive? They're not giving correct answers. They're confrontational. They're, you know, hey, all those are signals. We know, okay, so are you hiding something? That's unusual behavior. Hey, look, anytime I get pulled over, you already know. Yes, sir. Here's my driver's license. Here's registration. Here's whatever you're going to need. They can see my hands at all times. They know I'm, you know, I got my window down all the way. I'm not trying to hide anything.
Right. Well, no, we know that's the procedure, and that's what I taught my kids. Hey, roll your window down. Have your license ready. Your insurance ready. Both hands on the steering wheel so they can see both your hands. And you know, a state trooper. You know, any state trooper, they'll tell you that puts them at ease. However, a cop shouldn't go from 0 to 100 because they don't feel like being questioned. Now, Duke, this is a perfect segue into something that happened to my son when he flew home from college for Thanksgiving. And this is going to blow your mind. So he flies in the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. He flies into San Antonio. I'll go up there to pick him up, right? So you have to go around. You can't just park in front of the baggage claim area outside. You have to keep moving. Right, unless you're actually picking somebody up right then and there. So I'm parked. This one police officer says, hey, you need to move. He taps my glass like, hey, you need to move. I say, hey, my son's coming down. He's about to grab his bag and come out, and we're going to roll. He's like, no, get moving. You know, pretty forcefully. I'm like, okay. So I had to drive back around. It takes about 10 minutes because you're waiting in line.
Right.
My cousin wasn't there yet. And so I had to go back around again. So the third time I pull up, this one cop stops me at the cones because that's where they have all the limos and the taxis. And he said, hey, you need to move over to the next lane because these cabs are coming out. I said, hey, my son's right there on the sidewalk. Can I just, you know, move in here and come get him? The guy said, yeah, come on, let me guide you in. So he guides me around the cones. I go in, and everything's great. Okay, so my son sees me. I see him. And as I'm pulling up to him, he steps off the curb with his bag. And then I see the cop, the same cop that told me to go around earlier, you know, tells him, he's telling him something. And then I see my son point at me at the car as I'm pulling up, and I'm about to get out. And then the cop, all of a sudden, you see his whole demeanor change, and I can see that my son's face change, and I'm instantly like, okay, something's not right here. So I go up to him. I say, hey, what's going on? Because they're back, they're going, like, back toward the building. I'm like, hey, what's going on? And he said, Dad, he's giving me a ticket for jaywalking because I stepped off the curb to walk toward the car. And I'm like, dude, you've got to be kidding. And he said, hey, I told him to get back on the curb, and he stayed on the curb. I said, sir, he saw me. I saw him. I just pulled in here. He's walking toward our car to get in. He said, well, he needs to get back on the sidewalk. When I tell him to get back on the sidewalk, I say, sir, he just saw me so he can come and get in our car. And the guy, you know, he was all right. And I say, I can't. I say, you are actually going to write my kid a ticket for jaywalking because he stepped off the curb to walk to our car? He said, he needs to do what I tell him to do when I tell him when he needs to do it. And I'm like, wow. And so I had to calm myself down, okay? So I took my son's bag, I put it in the trunk, walked back over there, and I told the guy, I said, are you seriously going to write him a ticket because he stepped off the curb to get in our car? And this happened at the San Antonio International Airport. And so I got the guy's badge number, I got his name, I called the supervisor, the guy called me the day after Thanksgiving, we had to talk about it, and he addressed it. And I don't know what happened to the guy. I said, hey, maybe he's having a bad day. I said, but that was the wrong way to handle that situation. So now, did that happen because we're black? Probably not. But, you know, I'm not going to throw out the race card on that one. I'm just saying, hey, that was a cop who handled the situation in the wrong manner as far as I'm concerned, and it could have been handled much, much better. Maybe he was having a bad day. I don't know, but that wasn't handled correctly.
There was
now
a time
if you take that to
the police. There was a time when if they said, roll your window down, you just rolled your window down. And now people, they challenge the authority, and they challenge it all the time.
Because
they've seen their own people get killed in an instant, you know, they don't have any mercy. They go from 0 to 100 because... To them, everything is potential life or death, I guess. I don't know, but...
Well, you don't know what type of cop you're going to get on any given day. I would like to think that the majority of the police officers in our country and first responders are good people. I would like to think that. However, I'm a grown man, and I live in the real world here as an adult, and I know that you just don't know who you're going to get from day to day. Now, the best way, as far as you're concerned, to handle that situation is not try to provoke a police officer, because we all know people in authority, some people tend to have egos, and some people's egos cannot take being challenged or what they perceive as being a challenge. And so that's why I told my kids, hey, if it sounds right, make sure you know the law, abide by the law, do what you're asked. If it looks like it's getting a little sketchy, then your antennas need to go up and make sure all your bases are covered. Now, as far as a cop going from 0 to 100, in his first instinct, is to pull a gun and shoot somebody. Duke, how do you explain that?
Yeah, that's not the right move. But ultimately, to me, the Black Lives Matter. It's more than just the police issue. People in the movement feel like black people have been oppressed. That a lot of people feel like reparations need to be paid. That black people will never be able to succeed at the level of whites, and because of that, that they're owed money, they're owed things, and an entitlement society is kind of developing, and You know, they want they all talk about equality, wanting things to be equal. But you know what? Not things aren't equal. But what
well,
do you think about that argument?
I don't subscribe
for the
blacks,
because they were at one point slaves, that they can never escape that.
Okay, so I'll tell you where I sit on all that. All right, number one, I don't subscribe to entitlement because I wasn't raised that way. I was raised by people who had land, worked hard, bought their own land. You know, my relatives that moved to the Galveston area came by horse and buggy back in the 1800s. Not every person of color or black in the country came from ancestors were slaves. That's just not the case. Even if it was the case, we have the tools available to us today to be very successful. There's more black people in college today than there ever was before. So when you see kids in $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 houses in very affluent neighborhoods, and they're, you know, children of color, their parents did something to get to that level. Now, is there inequality? Absolutely. Are there roadblocks put in front of you in corporate America? Do believe me when I say it is, it is. Okay, so I came out of telephone.
I don't doubt that there are roadblocks, but nothing that the individual can't overcome.
That is correct. You know, you have to be able to sidestep an obstacle, go through it, go around it, go under it, teleport across it, some kind of way, get around it. You're not going to be successful. Even if it was two white guys or two black guys, two Hispanic gentlemen, two Asian gentlemen or women in business together, and they're going heads up, regardless of if that's business, and you're going to have to be able to sidestep that. If someone's trying to hurt your career, that's pretty dang sinister. If they're trying to hurt your career because they don't like your skin color that God put you in, that's evil. Okay. And so you have to, and again, there are certain ways you can handle it. You and I handle situations a different way than somebody that may not be as schooled or experienced as we are, okay? Or may not have the same amount of grooming that you and I have, all right? I don't have problems with cops except for, you know, this guy was trying to pull my son, but I handled it by talking to his supervisor, and this guy, it was addressed, and I don't, because the way I present myself, I don't come off as, you know, I look at, you know, Nature Channel, National Geographic quite a bit, and there's a lot in the animal kingdom that relates to the human world. And, you know, in the animal kingdom, the weak get picked off, okay?
Yeah.
And so,
survival
of
the fittest.
Okay, yeah, the survival of the fittest, and sometimes that translates into humanism, and you got to be careful with that, so... You know, my kids are very strong kids, and usually they don't get messed with because of the way they carry themselves. They don't make themselves a target. But regardless, you have evil people in the world, and you have good people in the world. And unfortunately, the evil people will try to pick off who they presume to be weak or whatever. Or if it's an evil person in a position above you. We saw in the Air Force from time to time, dude, where you're like, how in the world did that guy get in a position of authority, right?
Yeah.
And then
we've seen
up
that
somebody's
a bunch.
Career. Yeah, we've seen, we saw.
That's why I got out. Well, hey, I'll tell you what, AJ, our program has come to an end. I do thank you so much for calling in, sharing your thoughts, and speaking from your heart. I know that no sugarcoating anything there. Chris, thank you for calling in. I know Chris is a friend of mine. We're in business together. He's in the finance industry. And always been listening to the show, and his first time calling. And we're going to have an entire segment with him. Thanks for calling in, Chris. Folks,
thanks,
you can
great show.
Watch or find me on Facebook, The Duke Machado Show, and follow me on Twitter, at Duke Machado 1. New program will be airing on Patriot Insight next week. So this is exciting times. AJ, you're the man. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, thank you, brother. I appreciate anything.
All right,
dude.
Chris. We'll catch you later.
Okay. I will see you.